Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to another episode of the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It is fantastic to have your company as it always is. Now, we all know that no matter what our aspirations are with our practice, no matter whether we're going to grow, scale, or everything in between, we need to be able to build a great team. Building a great team is something that is never taught at university, along with most of the other business stuff that we need to grow our practice. But building a team is the key skill that's going to allow us to take our practice to the next level. Whether you want to stay on the tools and continue to do dentistry, you're going to want to have a great support team around you. Whether you want to create leverage and scale your team, you're going to need to build a great clinical team to deliver great care on behalf of you. So my guest today is Dr. Michael Neal, and he is an expert at this particular element of business. He is an optometrist and founder of Build My Team, which is a company dedicated to helping healthcare professionals find the right teams for their practice, which is really key because anyone can find a team. It's about getting the right team. So over many, many years of growing his own practice, he's invented a scientific and a predictable way to hire superstar team members, which of course is what we all want. So Dr. Neal takes the guesswork out of hiring with his scientific process, and he saves other healthcare providers valuable time while helping reduce team turnover, which is, again, a key thing that's going to be important. So Michael, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us today. How are you going, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks so much for the invite and looking forward to see how I can help your listeners.
Thank you once again. Building a team is something that if I was to talk to my clients and to categorize the challenges that they face on any given day, and if I was to do a straw poll, typically the thing that comes up most of all is team, dealing with other people. And you've got a professional background in eye care, and there's lots of similarities between optometry, which as we know, optometry in the US is slightly different to optometry here in Australia. But the day-to-day challenges of running the practice are the same. And I wanted to ask you, what was the impetus for getting into teams and understanding hiring processes and then, of course, launching Build My Team? What was the driving force behind that?
Absolutely. Well, it all started about 4 years ago when I'd been in practice for, was it 16 years, just had my 20th anniversary in eye care. And our practice was embezzled from. We had something horrible happen with our practice manager. It was awful. It was absolutely awful. I mean, anybody who's listening who's had that happen to them, just your heart just sinks when you hear something like that. And I really was not having any fun whatsoever at work. It was awful. I didn't enjoy going there. Didn't enjoy working with the team. Really, the only thing I liked were the patients. And I started thinking, you know, I'm getting to the point where I just don't want to come into work anymore. However, I like the patient care. What are we going to do about this? And I took a look at just, you know, the top five things I wanted to change about my work day. Spent time thinking about it. And number one, it was more like number one, two, and three were the same thing. It was the team that I worked with. I was very, very unhappy. And so I took a look at how Walt Disney, the Four Seasons, Ritz-Carlton, some of those amazing service organizations, how are they hiring? You know, I figured they're smarter than I am. They absolutely have to be. They're getting this great success routinely over and over. What are they doing? And it turns out they were hiring the exact opposite way we were hiring. Okay. So, boy, it was so counterintuitive. What they did is they would post a job, they would get a gazillion applicants, tons and tons of applicants, lots and lots. They wouldn't try and pick the applicants that were the best applicants. Okay. They didn't do that. What they did instead is they ran them through scientific assessments that removed all of the people that they knew could not do the job. Okay. So they weren't looking for the right person. They were looking for all of the wrong people. They took them out of the candidate pool. And then they would continue to refine this through a series of scientific assessments to really get kind of the cream of the crop, if you will, the top performers. And then they would start bringing them in for interviews. And what I noticed when I did a further deep dive on that, they wouldn't dream of posting a position and not going through the scientific assessments. It's critical. And then applied to our process, I thought, well, what's the scientific assessment?
Yeah,
I guess we should probably figure that one out, right? Did a really deep dive into the whole industry, attended trade shows, all kinds of reading, you name it, and took a look at the different ways that you can essentially assess performance and predict performance. That's the key thing. So started out with my cell phone, mm-hmm. reaching out to applicants for our own practice. And that was as big of a nightmare as you could possibly imagine. I mean, what doctor wants to do that?
No.
However, what I noticed is that we started to get a hold of people and ran them through our very basic assessment process at the time. What we were able to do was reject about 50, 60% of people, which was a huge win compared to rejecting zero. And flash forward a couple of years, at this point, tens of thousands of candidates, hundreds of thousands, quite possibly, and a whole different level of scientific assessments. Now, believe it or not, Build My Team will reject approximately 97% of the candidates that apply.
Wow.
Yeah. So and this was developed through feedback loops and practices. And it doesn't matter what position we're talking about in a practice. We have algorithms for all of the major ones, essentially. So now by rejecting those people, the ones that remain, we run through a video interview. Mm-hmm. And in the video interview, when you do this, I have team members on, they do this essentially for a living. It doesn't matter if you're black, if you're white, if you're green, if you're pink, if you're purple, none of those things matter. It doesn't matter if you're male or female, it's completely irrelevant. When you take our scientific assessments and you match them to the performance that we're seeing in how a person answers the questions, what their answers are, all those types of things, we end up with candidates that are in the 97-98 percentile. And then this whole thing's a done for you service. Then we take these candidates and send them over to the practice. Mm. So that all started from a person who I would like in another lifetime I could thank for embezzling the funds from our practice.
Yeah.
I'm not there yet. Okay, yeah. I'm human.
There's a little bit of personal growth to go between now and when we get to that point. Yeah.
I'm gonna use that line. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard to be grateful for that. I know we talk about the silver linings and all the rest of it. And yeah, we've got to work hard to find there.
Some personal growth, that's for sure.
Yeah. So I've had some personal growth building teams as well. I haven't had an embezzlement situation, touch wood, or at least not one I know of. Maybe that's a better way of describing it. But I have probably made almost every single mistake when it comes to hiring people over the years and probably created my own categories of mistakes if I'm candid. So much so that many years ago, the best man at my wedding is also a dentist, and he was having a tough time with his practice and one of his team members. And this is going back years ago now. This is 15, 16 years ago. He'd ring me and go, "Jesse, I've had a really bad day at work, but no matter how bad my day has been, I know yours has been worse. So can you just cheer me up? Because I'm feeling terrible, but I know like misery loves company. So I'll know yours is worse." So one of the things that I can't speak to optometry training in the United States or Canada or anywhere else, but I do know that in dental training in Australia, there's not a single lecture, not a single module, not a single sentence dedicated to how to hire people, how to work with other people within a team. And yet we learn these clinical skills and we're thrown into that environment and we kind of got to pick it up osmotically. I wanted to ask you around learning these skills, and obviously you've taken the time to learn those skills, and that's how you've built your, not just your practice, but Build My Team. But what are the common pitfalls that you see practice owners making when they try to go about their recruitment process on their own? Where are they coming unstuck?
Terrific question. In our optometry school, we had one class. That was it. Wow. So, I mean, we blew the doors off relative to your practice management training.
Totally.
Imagine trying to condense all of practice management into either zero or one class. I mean,
But doesn't it amaze you, though, we spend 4 or 5 years learning those clinical skills and somehow we expect to just have the business skills?
It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. And not to mention that you have tremendous student loans as soon as you leave school. Most people do. So you've got a financial noose around your neck. Go forth and try and start a practice. I mean, the fact that anybody can do it is spectacular, right?
Yeah.
So what I used to do in our practice, well, my wife did the hiring for years, and she's a phenomenal clinician. So this is one pitfall number one. Phenomenal clinician. Patients love her. She is absolutely terrific at the eye care business. She's extremely empathetic and caring and an absolute disaster on the hiring side of things. And I say that with all the love. I mean, my wife and I are partners in our practice. However, in an interview, or in a candidate selection process, what ends up happening is a doc who's really empathetic and a great doctor will pick the wounded puppies. That's how I like to describe these folks. These are candidates who apply that don't have their act together, but you can help them. You can care for them. You can nurse them back to health. You can get them well on their way in life. Exactly what you're trained to do as a doctor with a patient who's in some type of terrible situation. And it is an absolute disaster when applied to HR. You cannot do that. So pitfall number one, if that describes you, stop doing your own hiring as fast as possible. The reason being, you're going to find those wounded puppies. You're going to bring them into an interview. They're going to bat their puppy eyelashes at you. They're going to tell you what you want to hear. They're going to manipulate the heck out of you, because people who are in that situation, so many of them have the capability to do that. This is coming from one of the top optimists in the world. My glass is half full all the time. However, in HR, that is the situation you're in. You will be told what you want to hear. You'll be manipulated. You will leave the interview with a sense that that person is absolutely fantastic. You bring them on, and in 3 months, 2 to 3 months later, they're gone. Why are they gone? So we did that in all likelihood a couple hundred times over the course of the practice. And pitfall number one, stop it. You can't do that anymore. You need an objective hiring process in order to not get the same results over and over again, which we know is the definition of insanity. So that I would say is pitfall number one.
Cool. It's interesting you talk about the great clinician with the empathy and the caring, and I'm listening to you describe that person, and you could have been describing my wife as well. She is a brilliantly good clinical dentist. Patients love her. They travel miles, hundreds of miles to see her. And the thing I really love about my wife, which is probably fortunate for me as a husband, is she has a natural tendency to see the very best in people,
right?
Which is good for our marriage, perhaps not as useful. Perhaps not as useful from a recruitment point of view when we're trying to have an objective measure there. And certainly we've made that mistake in the past too. And we've had to remove her from certain things to have that objectivity. So assuming we can not do our own hiring, and of course many people listening to this podcast will be doing their own hiring, and that's something to consider and think about. For those people that say, you know what, I get that, Michael, I understand, I'm going to keep forging forward with my own hiring because I want to master the skills that you've mastered or become a better hirer. What do they need to be thinking about working on if they were to do it themselves?
Two things. And this leads me to point number two, experience. And then I guess the third would be the scientific assessments. So we'll flip it around to answer your question. The scientific assessments are critical because they're 100% objective. And in the interview process, the traditional interview process, you're looking at a person and thinking what they could be. Okay. You're not looking at them and thinking this is reality. You need to meet them where they're at, not where you think that they could be. Granted, the superstars, the top performers, you may be meeting them at a place where they're at right now, and it might not be that fantastic. Mm-hmm. They have a massive amount of potential inside them. How do you differentiate that from a person that you're meeting where they're at now? And that's the best day they've ever had. who knows, right? Yeah. Who knows? You look at the stock market, is it about to go up or is it about to go down? As soon as you can master predicting that, you let me know. But it's the same concept with interviewing. So when I looked at the process of what we were doing, I realized that it's not so much us, it's that the process is completely flawed. You cannot win in an environment where you're selecting candidates based upon what their resume says. Mm. So I'll give you some extreme examples on the Build My Team side of things. That 97% that we get to, we don't look at resumes.
Okay.
Those people are eliminated without opening a single resume.
Tell me more about that.
The entire process is designed to find people with natural strengths and talents for the position that they're applying for. Mm-hmm. So somebody who is a receptionist, for example, a medical secretary, receptionist, whatever you want to call them, the type of person you're looking for in your dental practice is identical to the type of person I'm looking for in my eye care practice mm-hmm. and in a medical practice. They're the same thing. What happens behind them at the front desk is it just varies by profession, but at their job, it's identical. So what we were looking for is a person with different traits and different skill sets, essentially. One of them being stress management, for example. So as part of the assessment process, we created a way to measure how they handle stress. And you say, well, how is that possible? It's entirely possible within the scientific assessment process. Now, I'm not sure what healthcare in Australia is like, but in America, in North America, it's stressful. Yeah. Absolutely stressful. You've got, and of course it's the same down there, but you've got a ringing phone, a person in front of you, emails coming in, bing, mm-hmm. there goes another text from a patient. Somebody's asking you for to pay you. You're asking somebody else to take their money. I don't know what, 5-7 things going on simultaneously.
Yep.
If you can't handle stress, you're gone. You will not last until lunch, right? Time. So those are components of what we're looking for. Back to the resume side of things, the natural strengths and talents are critical because if a person shows up for work and they just love what they do, they come in, they don't understand why everybody kind of looks at them a little different. I think this is really easy. Why can't you do 5 things simultaneously? Mm. I personally cannot. I'm going to top out at about 1.1, I think, on any given day. But there are people out there that naturally couldn't do less than 3 on any given day. That's one of the strengths that we're looking for. If you start to extrapolate that to other things, like, for example, how they perform, can they handle details and paperwork? Are they warm and friendly with patients? Do they follow procedures and policies consistently? So I'll give you an example there. That's one end of the spectrum. They follow these procedures and policies consistently. The other end of the spectrum, they make exceptions to procedures and policies. So in a busy dental practice, how many patient encounters would they be doing a year on average?
Oh, gosh. Well, it depends on how many chairs are in the practice.
Yeah.
But let's just say they're seeing anywhere between 12 and 15 patients a day per chair, sometimes less, sometimes more, depending on the procedures. Do that 5 days a week, just trying to do the mental maths as we go. Let's call it 75 encounters per chair per week. Let's call it 50 weeks of the year. So 750 times 5 is, what's that, 3,750 encounters per chair per year. If you've got multiple chairs, obviously you can go through that.
So why don't we call it, for sake of argument, 20,000 encounters?
Yeah.
Now, you've got a team member who follows policies and procedures very, very well 90% of the time on 20,000. You've got 2,000 patients where they're not following what they're supposed to be. Mm. How is that going to work out for your practice? I'll tell you, your reviews will be terrible.
Yep.
And nothing else matters past that. We're in the business of essentially all doing the same thing over and over and over again, incredibly consistently, with the best possible outcomes in mind. That is one component of what makes a terrific, let's say, secretary. So all of these things rolled in, when they're discovered by the scientific assessments that we use, and how much of this that we've just talked about has anything to do with a resume? How much of this is actually shown on a resume?
None.
Absolutely zero. So flip it around. You go back to, let's contrast the traditional hiring method by looking at a resume. I'm going to pull up a document that was written by somebody who's obviously, this is the first resume they've ever written. It tells you absolutely nothing about them. It tells you, in fact, what they've been so good at that they left the job. We call it a fictional failure file. It's mostly made up. It documents their failures, and they send it to you in a nice file on an email. That's, for the most part, how you should be thinking about a resume. Now, we don't approach it any differently in traditional hiring because there hasn't been a better approach. The better approach is to have the scientific assessments tell you who you're sitting across from in an interview, and to approach it that you're not actually getting to the interview stage with them unless you know that they can do the job.
That makes really perfect sense when you say that out loud. But of course, it's not intuitive if you've been through a traditional hiring process in the past, because now you kind of go, when you say it, you just go, yeah, that makes perfect sense. Why have I not thought about that before? Interested to ask for your thoughts around, you've spoken about resumes, and I 100% agree with what you're saying. Is there any value, like, just to go to the reception job, if part of their role is to be able to correspond in a written format with others.
Right.
Is there any value in, you know, just checking the resume itself for basic punctuation and grammar, and can they actually construct a sentence? Because, you know, if they're sending that to you and it's not correct, then God knows what's going to happen with the outbound communication. Do you ever look at it? Is that part of your assessment at all? Do you ever use that?
At the very end. Yeah. At the very end, when we know that this person can do the job, then our team will pop open a resume, sometimes and sometimes not. Mm. And this gets to the next point. And this comes down to experience. This also gets to the discussion on, you know, leaving first base and going to second base. Are you actually going to be able to make that jump, or are you going to get tagged out going back to first base? The way we approach this in Build My Team is to functionally ignore experience.
Wow.
Okay. So in our practice, just going through this in my head, our front desk person never had any healthcare experience whatsoever. She has a master's in music and she's a marathoner.
Wow.
So why would we be looking at her for our front desk position? Well, she sailed through the, what we call our insight report, which is all of the assessments. This is a person who has the discipline to run on a regular basis. This is a person who has a master's degree, who shows the dedication and the discipline to get something accomplished in her life. And she has been doing spectacularly well within the position. We have another person who was a manager at a customer service manager at a large retail store. We have another person who's a bartender. We have another person who's a student who wants to go into the Justice Department. We have a person who came to us with a medical problem that would prevent her from being hired anywhere else. And we were able to do all of this because we knew when they go through the assessments, these are people who are going to be able to do the job very, very well. What we also don't have to do is, let's say somebody's coming in with experience. Well, it's experience elsewhere, right? So in your dental practice, are you doing things identically to your best man at your wedding's dental practice?
No.
Of course not, right? Yeah. Of course not. So if that person's coming from their practice, or let's say an unknown practice, into yours, they're going to bring habits.
Yes,
they're going to bring things that you love, and hopefully, and they're going to bring things that you are scratching your head saying, how do we unring that bell? Well, you can't unring a bell. So our model takes these superstars without bad habits. Okay. They don't have the bad habits. So we can get them trained and up and running incredibly quickly. For example, what used to take 4 years ago, 6 months to get one of our technicians up and running and productive. 6 months. Mm. Imagine that hiring cycle. Now we have it down to them being productive at a basic level between 7 to 10 days with no experience whatsoever. And it's approximately, for most of them, 3 weeks before they're operating at a 90% productivity level. That's down from 6 months.
That's phenomenal. And so obviously there's a structured training onboarding process that supports all of that. Mm-hmm. Could you walk us through what some of the foundational parts of the onboarding and training would look like? And because that is a remarkable on-ramp into the business and to have someone up and running. I know that people will be listening to this as they're driving and they pull over on the side of the road and go, did I just hear that right? Did he just say 7 to 10 days? And so could you walk us through just what underpins that onboarding training, please?
Sure. So we start off with measuring a person's mindset, and there's a measurement tool that we use, and we created a mindset for healthcare. Mm-hmm. Now there are mindsets for anything, of course. And we needed to start with people who are, I'll give you some examples, are accountable. They're team players. They're grateful and appreciative. They have initiative. We want folks who believe in a first-class experience, who have a helpful heart. They love caring for people. You would be absolutely shocked at how many people apply for healthcare jobs and they don't like people. What they're looking for is the stability of a healthcare position. So those folks have to be ruled out. We want them to be reliable, have honesty and integrity, be lifelong learners. That's incredibly important. There is a tsunami of information that's coming to your dental practice or my eye care practice on any given day. They have to be able to keep up with that. And we also look for people who don't believe in entitlement. If they think that they're God's gift to your dental practice, good luck.
Yeah.
they will never work out, and they'll probably take a couple team members down with them. Right. So we start out with measuring that mindset. And when they have a healthcare mindset, then we move forward to the next step. And that's where we measure their speed of learning. So we want people who can learn quickly. They don't have to learn as fast as the doctor does. That's not realistic for most people. What we want, they can learn quickly, they can process information quickly, and this is something that's measurable. Then from there, we're looking at some of those things that I talked about before. Are they warm and friendly with patients? Do they follow those procedures? Can they handle the paperwork? Do they enjoy routine, or are they bored by extended routine? How about their follow-up? I mean, healthcare, 99% of what we do in so many different ways is follow-up.
Follow-up.
Most of society can't do that. And so this all needs to be figured out. We also measure motivation, things like their working environment. That stress measurement was one of them. So this is the person that's coming into the door to start. This is not a random selection like a slot machine that was our approach 4 years prior. So now when we have a person who's capable of performing at a tremendously high level, who has the natural personality, strengths, and talents for what would be successful in the field, what's left? I mean, that's 80, 90% of the battle. What you have to teach them is, let's say, the software, the particular practice software, answering a phone with a smile on your face. Some folks would say that's at least half the battle.
Yeah, totally.
Right?
Yeah.
Et cetera. And so you end up in a situation where you don't have to have a person coming in where you're reinventing the wheel each and every time. That has changed our entire practice.
Yeah. And I can see what would absolutely revolutionize your practice and reduce your stress, increase your productivity, a bunch of really good things happening out off the back of that. I've got two quick questions for you, and they may be slightly irrelevant questions, but I want to ask them just to test my assumptions here. We spoke off air about you work in 8 different industries and dentistry being one of those. I'm curious to ask, what are the parallels between the different professions, or whether it's exactly the same. And of course, that'll be dependent on the role. But I wanted to ask what, if any, differences particularly there are around hiring support staff versus hiring professional staff, if any differences in that assessment, sure. The scientific assessment around that. Because
yeah, absolutely.
Dentist comes out of university, optometrist comes out of university, you've got the professional qualifications. So just curious to ask about that.
Our focus is heavily on the support staff.
Yeah.
The folks where you look at a resume and you can't make heads or tails out of that person.
Yeah.
We have cracked that nut. It is wide open. This is repeatable and valid across the 8 different healthcare professions that we're in. What we don't focus on are the professionals. Now, our model is to remember, this is a service for our clients. So they tell us, for example, that they want a medical secretary or a dental secretary or an eye care secretary or technicians or you name it. Each of the positions we work with, we write the job description and we write it in a way that you will never have seen before. Mm-hmm. This isn't come work at our practice, we're the best ever. It's pretty much the exact opposite. We talk about their contribution. We talk about how they're going to help grandpa and grandma see better in eye care or feel better about the smile that they have or not be in pain from their teeth that are hurting, those types of things. So a lot of it is about the contribution. And then we take that job description and we publish it to 22 different job boards.
Wow.
So our goal is to cast the widest possible net because remember, we're rejecting almost everybody. That approach works incredibly well for the support staff, the what you would call like the non-licensed positions, essentially. You want to hire a dentist, you're not going to have, I mean, in our practice, before COVID happened, we had 272 applicants for a medical secretary position in our practice within 30 days.
Wow.
So when I say cast the widest net, we're not joking around with that. COVID has reduced a lot of that in North America. I don't know how it is in Australia, but that approach does not work in the same way with dentists or licensed professionals. The other way to flip this is, let's say you have a couple dentists apply for your position. What we would do is run them through our assessment process, not so that you can pick the superstar. They're all superstars. They're board certified. Mm-hmm. You want to have the person that is going to mesh with what you're looking for in your practice.
Yes.
And you can categorically assume that the professionals are going to interview spectacularly well.
Yes.
I don't see a scenario. I mean, if you run into a situation where they're not going to interview well, then terrific. Imagine all the misery you save yourself. But generally, that's not the case. So in that scenario, we would want you to know that these are people who could do the job, not only because they're qualified on the licensing side, but that they would be a good match to your practice. And then you use that as the basis of discussions with them. This is where it all goes. You're going to talk. And you're going to communicate back and forth. And you're going to make sure that it's a good fit for them just as much as it's a good fit for you. Nobody needs to talk a professional into coming on to the practice only to have them give their notice 2 or 3 months into it. That's disastrous. It's an awful, awful situation. So you really would use this to make sure that it's a terrific fit all around.
Yeah, perfect. Okay. Because again, whether people want to grow their practice and stay on the tools themselves, they're going to need to really build out that support team, which you've obviously cracked the code on that. And then equally, if they want to have extra clinical support, then they're going to need to be able to interview the clinical or licensed staff around right. that as well. And again, that's really key. Michael, you've been incredibly generous with the team, and I know that you've got some really good resources. I'm actually looking at them as we speak, and one of the resources has got a question I want to ask you about in a second as well. But for those people who are wanting to get some more information, I'm going to suggest you head across to buildmyteam.com. There's a cheat sheet there, which is the health practice hiring cheat sheet, and there's also the curing hiring paralysis guide as well. A really good couple of resources there. So do head across to buildmyteam.com and get those. But on one of those guides, the curing hiring paralysis guide, I wanted to pick up one of the points, which is why slow to hire and fast to fire is outdated advice. Now, of course, what I'm thinking this speaks to is the rigor of the process at the front end, meaning that you don't have to fire because you've hired well in the first place. So right. I'm assuming that's the premise of that comment. Is that correct?
It's a little more encompassing than that. With our process, our all-time record, and this is not something anybody should expect, but our all-time record was a surgeon who reached out to us on a Sunday night. And I quote, this is what he sent us. And I quote, "I need a body."
Oh, God.
Okay.
So I thought it was going to be bad when you prefaced it with a surgeon. Sorry for the surgeons. Well, I apologize. I shouldn't say that, but that is pretty direct.
You just never know. So we had his job ad up and running on Monday. The applicants started coming in on Tuesday. We found a superstar for him Wednesday morning.
Wow.
Connected that person with the surgeon on Wednesday afternoon after patient care. She was in his office working on Thursday.
Wow. Okay.
So the slow to hire, fast to fire, we just did the exact opposite of that. Mm. In this job market, if you are slow to pull the trigger on a superstar,
you're going
to
miss them.
Gone.
Yeah.
Now, they want to work for decisive people. They want to work for people who can grow a business. And they know that that doesn't come from mulling decisions for 6 months.
Yep.
In eye care, eye docs really are spectacular at mulling these decisions over and over. And these people leave. They're gone.
Absolutely.
They will have applied for 30 positions in an hour. Don't believe me? Try it. They're clicking the job description so quickly that they don't realize what they applied for. In fact, when we first built our first version of our software, we did it via email. And what we realized is that email doesn't work fast enough to get their attention and keep their attention. Now, when you apply for a job through Build My Team, within 3 to 4 seconds, your cell phone buzzes with a text. It's set up that way. And it was brutal to set up that way. So hard. But the reason it's done is we want to get you before you're applying for the next job.
Yeah.
That's literally the reason why.
Yeah.
So by doing that, we can get them engaged in the process of our assessments and move them through.
So my next question then, Michael, is when are you launching this in the Southern Hemisphere, my friend? Because I think there'll be a lot of people who'll be going, wow, that's a good service. How do we participate in that? But at the moment, it's a North American service. You've given some great insights and resources around how to improve the hiring process for those of us in the Southern Hemisphere. But I can't not ask, when are you going to come down under?
Well, I think that's a fantastic discussion. That's exciting. At the time of recording, we're all dealing with COVID. Offline, you just said that Australia went back into lockdown, which is a spectacularly challenging professional environment for your listeners who are located down there. But I would love to, absolutely love to. And that's something I think we should discuss.
All right. Well, I think we'll continue that conversation. But in the meantime, Michael, you've been incredibly generous with your knowledge and your insights. And thank you for walking us through that process, because I think irrespective of whether people have access to your service or something similar or not, it's really good to really sharpen the thinking, sharpen the skills around getting better at this hiring process, building a team. Because as you said, and as we work with our clients, well, to get any form of growth, any form of leverage, you've got to be able to build a team. And we spend so much time in the coaching space helping people get better at it. But I love this scientific process. It can really supercharge it. And that's fantastic. So thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome. And, you know, for people who are looking to find out more about us, take a look at buildmyteam.com. The consultations are all free of charge and scheduled, of course. So since we are in North America, we do have evening hours for docs who, let's say, might be down under looking for some advice or otherwise, and would love to help. That's what our team is really based on, are helping practices crack this code so that they can get out of the misery and the stress that is the constant exercise, the hamster exercise wheel that I love to use. You know, you're just running and running and you never get anywhere. I've been there, done that. Unfortunately, got the t-shirt, and the company was created to stop that, to stop it cold. And we've been able to do that for, as I said, about 33 different states plus Canada and the US and Canada, and then 8 different healthcare professions. So we're excited to help and to serve our clients.
Well, thank you for that, mate. Thank you for all the good work you're doing for not just the dental profession, but all the healthcare providers, because it's a really valuable service. And if my best man is happening to listen to this podcast, he should reach out.
Absolutely. We'd love to help him.
All right. Well, thank you once again, Michael. You're a good man, and I look forward to talking to you soon.
All right. Thanks so much, Jesse.
Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast with Dr. Jesse Green. For more free tools and resources, join the free Facebook group. Visit drjessegreen.com/Facebook. And for more episodes, visit drjessegreen.com/Savvy Dentist.